Welcome, everyone, to Wise Talk. This is Mariposa's monthly leadership forum. Today, we're jazzed to have Dr. Suhas Kshirsagar. Dr. Suhas is a world-renowned Ayurvedic. Is that how you spell it? Is it Vedic or Vedic?
Ayurvedic.
Ayurvedic, that's what I thought. Physician. He's a physician and educator from India and the director of the Ayurvedic Healing and Integrative Wellness Clinic in Santa Cruz. He holds a BA in Ayurvedic medicine and completed a 3-year residency as an MD with a gold medal at the prestigious Pune University. He is the author of several books, including The Hot Belly Diet, a 30-day Ayurvedic plan to reset your metabolism, lose weight, and restore your body's natural balance to heal itself. He's the co-author of The Art and Science of Vedic Counseling with David Frawley. And his most recent book is Change Your Schedule, Change Your Life, How to Harness the Power of Clock Genes to Lose Weight, Optimize Your Workout, and Finally Get a Good Night's Sleep. Dr. Suhas is an advisor and consultant at the Chopra Center, a faculty member at several Ayurvedic institutions, and a sought-after motivational speaker, researcher, and an acclaimed educator in the field of integrative medicine. So I want to welcome you. I know you go by your first name, Dr. Suhas, so I'm going to continue to call you Dr. Suhas or just Suhas.
That's perfect. Thank you.
Thanks so much for being here. Wonderful that you're able to join us from Santa Cruz. And as you probably know, if you've been with us in the past, we've been doing this for about 16 years now. And so we've got lots of other Wise Talk recordings that you're welcome to listen to and to send to your friends. So as I mentioned, we've done many of these, and I always start out with a question about your personal journey. I read your bio, which is certainly one aspect of you, but I want you to, if you could, tell us a little bit about your journey into Ayurvedic medicine and kind of how you got to where you are now.
Well, thank you again. It's my great joy and honor to be with all of you, and I'm very impressed and inspired by the work that Mariposa has been doing for a pretty long time. Going back to your question, Sue, is growing up in India, I was born and brought up in a rural part in India, and there Ayurveda and Ayurvedic medicine was considered more as a way of living, as a part of life, where your everyday routine, the kind of food that you eat, the meals that you prepare, the spices that you use, some emotional bonding, communication, counseling with the elders within the family. It was something, it was not even considered as a medicine, but it was a way of life. It
mm-hmm.
was something that really inspired me. And as I went through my basic schooling and started reading, learning, understanding more, I realized that Western medicine was a little bit more ill-equipped with that bigger aspect of life. Apart from diseases, it was just not able to address the total health of a human being and the human potential. So with my background as from a Vedic tradition and having seen this closely, I actually chose to study Ayurvedic medicine a little bit more closely and went to an Ayurvedic medical school, did my undergrad, did my postdoctoral research, and I was starting my clinical practice in India in a rural part when I was invited by His Holiness Maharshi Mahesh Yogi, who was the founder of the Transcendental Meditation Group, and he was the guru of Beatles, and he was based in Holland, and he invited me and my wife, who is also an Ayurvedic physician, to come and talk about Ayurveda to the West and how this way of life and this medicine is something which is much more effective and thoroughly comprehensive. So that's mm-hmm. when I left India and started traveling all around the globe, interacting with local physicians, clinicians, starting schools, developing colleges, curriculum, starting clinical practices, clinics, detoxification centers, working in the field of yoga, Ayurveda, meditation, the science of wellness, self-care, all those things. And here I am after 30 years in United States where yoga has become a way of living. Ayurveda is slowly becoming and catching up with yoga. And I think the challenges that we face with the Western medicine right now is helping this evolve as a good complementary way of thinking, behaving, living, and optimizing your health, where you are much more responsible for your own individual health and well-being, cultivating habits, learning more about yourself, how the mind works, how the body works, what you're doing is how it is influencing your body. So I think everything that I learned that was coming from a very ancient wisdom body of knowledge is becoming cutting-edge medicine now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I studied when I was just out of grad school, I study a lot of stuff with mind-body health, and so I'm really excited to hear about you know, what you have to say about how it's we can integrate this now. I mean, it's like 30 years later, right? We need to figure that out. So let's start with your book. You've written a lot of books, but this recent book about change your schedule, change your life, I think is really interesting. You really think that the daily routines make a big difference in terms of like when you exercise, for example, before breakfast, and could you, like, there's a lot to talk about there, obviously, but if you could give us an overview of the concept of schedule, and then we can go into maybe some of the specifics.
I think I was under the impression, and as you know, I practice in the Bay Area, and I see so many Silicon Valley executives and leaders and managers and people like that, and I've been treating their conditions, which was shaping up way early in their 30s and 40s. They were developing pre-diabetes and tendency for heart disease and vascular inflammation, obesity, metabolic syndrome, insomnia, insulin resistance. And as I started talking to them, I realized that the way they are scheduling their activities all day long has a lot to do with how their body is behaving. And I started digging out the research, because coming from an Ayurvedic perspective, we know that how an ideal daily routine is important. But when I started looking at research, all of these diseases can be directly linked with disruption in our circadian rhythms. Down to the cellular and the molecular level, a circadian disruption can affect your gene expression. And then when I started correlating that with Ayurvedic medicine, with an ideal daily routine, seasonal routine, and started correcting those things in these people, we started seeing the shift in people's weight, stamina, cognition, their general mood and health all together itself. And circadian medicine is a newly evolving science, but it's a perfect template to understand that how to synchronize our internal circadian rhythms of light and darkness to the cellular level, because time is embedded in our genes, and this response to light is hardwired. It is fairly inflexible biology, and yet social and economic systems of modern human provoke it constantly, because I've been reading some of your blogs and the activities that you guys are doing at Mariposa, and I think you would understand that the schedules are becoming very busy. And it is almost reaching to a state where I often ask this question, is your schedule killing you? Because emails, text, voice messages, Skype, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, social media, this has increased the pace of life tremendously. And especially in the corporate world, what you and me see is a perennial time scarcity. We are all becoming cash rich and time poor. Is that right?
Yeah. Definitely. So what you just, all that you just said is like, there's like, we could just spend the rest of our time just talking about some of that. So let's, because it's like, this is chock full of stuff. So let's just come back, just reel it back just a little bit, Dr. Suez. Okay. So let's talk about circadian rhythms first, because I think most of us think about that in terms of like jet lag and, you know, how we try to like, you know, we're traveling, how we try to curb that. So let's, will you give us a little bit of an overview on that and how that is the basis for which, you know, the rest of what you just talked about in terms of the time and space. And I also want to talk about COVID as well, and how, you know, having more time and space right now is actually, I think, mostly a good thing, but it's also, there's some problems with it too. So let's start with the circadian rhythms.
Well, I think circadian rhythms are important because we have to renew ourselves. There's a clear cycle that As the daylight hits our eyes, the body temperature starts warming up, and the body gets into a different gear of starting up activities.
Mm-hmm.
And when the sun sets down, then the body goes into a different mode of hibernation. So there's a daily routine of self-renewal, detoxification, purification, rejuvenation of the body with millions of functions. You won't even imagine millions of functions that are going on day and night constantly to allow our system to become strong physically, mentally, digestive system, immune system, all of those things. So our simple rule is, how can we harmonize our internal rhythms that the science have identified now? We are able to pinpoint it down to the cellular and the genetic level, and those out in the nature. Because whatever is going out outside the window is happening in our body itself. The nature moves in recurring cycles of rest and activity. There are circadian rhythms, which are 24-hour cycles of night and day. There are seasonal rhythms that we currently are seeing a change of season. So it's a 12-month cycle of Earth revolving around the sun. So there are six seasons, four seasons in different parts of the world that happen. There's a lunar rhythm, which is the cycle of moon around Earth, where it creates effect on Earth and various growing of the food and the cycles of day and night. Tidal rhythm, which are the gravitational influence of the moon and water, and the celestial rhythm, so influence of the planetary cycle. So what, in simple words, is when we are understanding that what we are doing at a given time, there are things that are happening in our body, either it is supporting it to make it really good, or it is affecting it to reduce the functionality of it. For example, it's around 10 o'clock. You should be peaking your melatonin secretions around 9:30, and you should be getting ready to sleep. But if you're busy looking through your work emails, working on a project, looking at late night shows, and staying awake and allowing that blue light to hit, you're throwing a wrench in that melatonin secretion. So you're blocking that by exposing yourself to that blue light at that time of the day. For example, 12:30 in the middle of day, the sun is prominent in the sky, and that's when your hunger, your digestive system is all open and ready to receive food and take the main calories of the day at that time. But if you're busy in a meeting, you're doing something, and you are hardly grabbing a shake or a smoothie or a sandwich here or there, and you ignore that signal, then it is going to suppress that, and suddenly you will be overly hungry late in the night. So instead of having the main meal of the lunch, you are eating main meal in the evening, and that disrupts the whole functioning of whatever the body is trying to do in the night at that time. So what you do has to be supported with what the body is doing. It's a simple rule. And what we have identified, that, say, around 6 o'clock in the morning, there's a sharpest rise in the blood pressure. The cortisol is peaking up. So it's a good time to wake up. It's a good time around 6:30 when the nature is waking up. You wake up around that time. 10, around 8, 9, 10, 11, your mind is at its clear best. The mental clarity is at its peak. So getting bulk of work done in a fresh, clear state of mind between that time is so important, because if you're busy, you're working, you're in your office, doing the work at that time is really good. Noon is the best time to get your lunch. Your best coordination time is later in the afternoon. The fastest reaction time is around 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock in the afternoon. So how you structure your work day with what the body is trying to do is, I think, the need of the hour. Around 5 o'clock in the evening, there's a greater cardiovascular efficiency and muscular strength that is going on. Around 6 o'clock or 7 o'clock in the evening, there's the highest blood pressure peaking up that is happening at that time. So you should be slowly having a lighter dinner around that time, and at least 3 hours before you go to sleep, so that your whole process of digestion is completed before you go to sleep. But if you're not aligning what you're doing with what your body is trying to do, then it starts disrupting that. And as I said, there are millions of activities that is happening.
Right.
When you wake up, when you are deep asleep in the night, there's an immune system activity that is happening. The WBC regulation is happening. The hormones are secreted, growth hormones, lymphocyte regulation, TSH, prolactin, melatonin as it speaks. When you wake up in the morning, the cortisol surges up. There's a catecholamine surge up. It raises your blood pressure, heart rate around 9, 10, 11. There's arterial compliance, vascular resistance, plasma renin activity, various activity with the blood chemistry that is happening. The hemoglobin synthesis is happening later in the afternoon. Airway patency, lipid triglyceride regulation happens at about 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock in the evening. All of those things are happening and carrying out in the body in a cyclical manner. So the clock genes, it's like literally a clock in which the body is responding. So the old
right.
school of thought was as you see the light, it sends a signal to this little area in the brain through optic nerve, which is called a suprachiasmatic nucleus. It's like a little grain of rice. And it sends that signal to the whole body to wake up and start acting up as if it's day.
Right.
Now that we know that with these clock genes, they are sensing this activity on their own. They are able to feel that. That this is the day, this is the night, this is what is happening. But if our activity, for example, I see people going and doing workout at 9 o'clock in the evening or 11 o'clock in the night, and if you're doing activities that are not in sync, if you're eating meals at about 9 o'clock in the night or 10 o'clock in the night, late evening meals, if you're skipping your breakfast or skipping your lunch or doing various activities at different times, all of those things, which we call it as certain habits, patterns that are developed due to working, due to activities, we are seeing that the body is creating diseases. It is slowly building up diseases because of disruption that is happening. It creates hormonal disruption, endocrinological disruptions, immune-related dysfunction, and that is the reason why we are seeing so many diseases now. About 70% of all the chronic diseases that we have and all causes of mortality is due to a poor lifestyle. And that is
okay.
the balancing part.
Yeah.
If your lifestyle is what is creating diseases, you need to really, really pay attention to how you're living your life, because it's just a matter of time that
right.
this busy schedule is going to catch up and create diseases that you would have no clue where it came from.
So, again, a lot to talk about. Let me ask a couple questions about differences between people. I mean, obviously, we have the early birds and the night owls. So how do you account for that?
Well, again, those are habits in many ways, okay? I mean, we are talking about even a single cellular organism that responds to the day and night. So every living organism, even the plants, respond to sunlight. And things where they open up and they are active during the presence of sunlight. They prepare food, photosynthesis, everything. So it is something that we just cultivate these habits, and then we think that I'm a morning person, I'm an evening person, I'm an owl or I'm a lark. Ideally, I think it's going to rattle some cages here, but that's a fact. That is a fact that we cultivate these habits. And imagine without the invention of the bulb, we were all happily waking up at sunrise and unwinding by sunset, isn't it? And with the advent of the light bulb, now everything is becoming more and more busy, and we are exposed to these lights and these cycles of light where we are getting disconnected from our bodily rhythms. We don't know whether we are thirsty or hungry or sleepy or tired or anything like that, because we are busy with these outside stimulation and things where the body is not able to understand. So in a simple rule, all the human beings should respond. Yeah, there are some variations with the chronotypes that I described in the book. Chrono means time, but there are mind-body type that Ayurveda talks about. There are people who are lean and thin and bubbly and energetic and have difficulty in gaining weight, can lose weight easily. We call them as Vata type. And they have difficulty in falling asleep and staying asleep and having a bigger attention span. They are creative, they are enterprising, but they can't hold their attention for a long time. So this is the beauty of that body type. We need to identify who we are, how we work, and kind of lead our lifestyle. Because if you put this kind of a person to do a traveling job that you're constantly sleeping in different hotel rooms and going from different time zones, and they will be soon exhausted and tired. They may like it mentally, but that is not, that body type is meant for that kind of irregularities in diet, sleep, and all kind of routines that are. They have to be very regular. That is what Vata or the air type is. Pitta type, which is more of a fiery red, medium muscular build. They are sharp, they're energetic, they are hungry, they have a good state of digestive function, they are warm, they are flush, they can be a bit grumpy and irritable rather quickly, but they're good focused, they have a sharp attention span, they can get things done quickly, they're very organized, they're a little bit more fussy and type A about how they want to do things, but that's who they are. They're good leaders, and they can manage things much more easily. But if these people, they burden themselves with too much of deadline, too much of pressure, too much of taking themselves too seriously and not paying attention to the lightness or ease or meditation or unwinding or fun or laughter, then they get very acidic, very bitter, very inflamed, very toxic, and that could be very challenging physically and even other people to be around them. And the third foot type is what we call it as a kapha type, which is a water or earthy type. They're a little bit more heavy. They're a little bit more stable, grounded, but they have a tendency to gain weight. They can be a little bit slow, methodical, a bit lazy, a little dull at times. They need some push. They need some stimulation. They are good HR people to start with because they always will lend their shoulders for someone to cry upon. They're good in holding hands. They're good listeners. They're unconditionally loving people. So once we know that, these people need to be a little bit more careful of not be procrastinating or not being lazy, having a structured routine, staying physically active, staying away from food that make them heavy, too much of carbohydrates, too much of sweet, going for hot, pungent, spicy foods, exercising more, sweating more, sleeping less. So these chronotypes, the Ayurvedic mind-body types, are so phenomenal. And the work that you do with people and personnel and managers and worker bees is so important for those people to really know who they are, how their body works, how their mind works, because their work-related productivity actually depends upon what they can do. Because one of the things that I often see, and I get quite a few patients from the Bay Area just because of that, because their manager is a typical Pitta type who is very sharp, who is very logical, who is very analytical, and the worker person could be a Vata type or a Kapha type, and they cannot relate to the speed with the work with which someone is doing. So if you're not willing to listen or see or observe and understand who that person is, understand their strength, maybe their weakness. This person is really good in building a team and working really good with the team. So they are good followers. This person is a good leader. They have leadership skill. This person is very creative. So instead of bombarding them with too many things, we just give them a little creative project and that will bring the best out of it. And constantly giving them different tasks to keep them excited and happy in the workplace. So identifying those are very important. And once we know who we are and how we respond to food and environment and people and experiences, and we calibrate that experience, we buffer that experience and change our attitudes, change our habits, and adopt better lifestyle habits, that is the wisdom. And I think you have been doing that from a work perspective. But I think this is high time to really blend individual and personal health with group health and workplace health, which is totally based upon how healthy and happy you feel is exactly how purposeful and productive you're going to be.
Right. Okay. So before we get have people call in here, I just wanted to spend a little bit more time on like the perfect day, I guess you could say, a daily routine. So you talk a little bit about like when you should exercise, and you talked already about eating and the importance of eating at noon and that being at your big meal and a small meal at 6. And then you also mentioned your book about exercising, and you think that you should do that. That should be done before breakfast, correct?
Yeah. And before we go there, Mith, I would just like to correlate this and what we know in medicine, that in those 24 hours, there are different times of the day. Say around 9 o'clock in the night, you're experiencing restless leg. You feel the legs are a bit achy and crampy, and muscles, menopausal hot flashes happen around 10 or 11 in the night. The gout attacks happen in the middle of the night around midnight. Gallbladder attacks often happen around 1 o'clock in the morning. Peptic ulcers, GERD, hyperacidity, those kind of attacks happen around 2 o'clock or 3 o'clock in the morning. Congestive heart failure, acute cardiogenic pulmonary issues happen around 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock in the morning. People wake up with cluster and migraine headache about before sunrise, 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock. 5, 6 o'clock is the greatest episodes of asthmatic attacks that happens. Interestingly, all causes of death, okay, all causes of death are most prevalent around 6:30 to 7 to 8 a.m. in the morning.
Interesting.
All causes of death.
And what I mean, that's sort of like the that's the average, if you will, or the
that's the average. Means all causes of death around that time is so high because the cortisol rises up. Depression is at its peak early in the morning. The cortisol is raising up. The blood pressure is rising up. The sticky platelets happen around that time. Okay, and we have heard this thing that 9 o'clock in the morning is the highest myocardial infarct with hospital admissions because of that, because the sticky platelets and adhesiveness and depression, and Monday morning, because people feel worse to have a whole day or week ahead of them as time. So I think it's interesting with the mind and the body gets fused around that time. Allergic rhinitis, cold, flu, sinus symptoms, itchy eyes is worst around 7:30, 8 in the morning. Morning stiffness is really bad around 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock for rheumatoid arthritis. Depression at its worst around 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock. Angina pectoris, myocardial infarct, sudden cardiac death, all peaking up at 9 o'clock in the morning. Stomach ulcer perforation happens within an hour after eating around 1, 1:30. Tension headache starts around 4, 4:30 in the evening. Osteoarthritic pain is worst at about 5, 5:30 in the evening. The cholesterol synthesis is elevated around 7 or 8 o'clock in the evening. The back pain is at its worst around 8 o'clock in the evening. So we know this from a disease perspective when these symptoms are arising. Mm-hmm. If you're not careful in building your day...
Can I ask you a question? Like, I was kind of really interested in this thing about the morning, like that just taking all the averages of all the people who have died, and obviously in some studies here, they're saying that like 7 to 9 in the morning is when things are at peak. And can you just explain that a little bit? Is that because we're
We wake up, we usually as human being, and from an Ayurvedic perspective, those are the two junction points where the day ends and the night begins in the evening. And when the night ends and the day begins, those are the two junction points when there is almost a peaking up of various adrenaline, cortisol, and catecholamine surge. It affects your blood pressure, it affects your heart rate, and if you already have some inflammation going on, there's an angry burst or something that happens, that you're getting irritable, angry in the morning, that inflammation can really take a toll, and that myocardial infarct can be very, very acute and very fatal if you're not careful. So the age-old wisdom is start your day with meditation, start your day with exercise, start with eating light and something positive, because that is going to structure your day. But if you wake up in a jiffy, and I see this all the time where people sleep late and they wake up a little bit dull and de-energized and feeling very weak and sluggish and sloppy, and then they are drinking unwanted amount of caffeine and getting unhealthy breakfast, and even when they show up for work, they're still feeling dull, heavy, and tired. But one of the quick fix that I mentioned in my book was if you are able to get about 20 to 30 minutes, even if you do 20 minutes of brisk cardiovascular exercise before breakfast, okay, before breakfast,
mm-hmm.
20 minutes of exercise before breakfast will reset everything, will prevent this cortisol surge. It will regulate your blood pressure. It will release endorphins, which are one of the most potent antidepressant, as you would say. And
yep.
Those people who work out early in the morning, they lose fat more easily. The chances of preventing a heart attack, stroke, getting diabetes by those people who work before breakfast for 20 to 30 minutes is 43% higher. Not even a single drug can do that. So exercise during fasting state can really kickstart the weight loss. You will consume unnecessary calories. You'll probably be very cautious about what you eat, because then, based upon that, you will select the right breakfast. You will be active all day long just because of that surge that you did at that time.
Yeah, because metabolically,
yeah,
right?
Metabolically,
it just helps.
But even,
yeah,
even physically, actively, because when you do, imagine that you get your 20-minute workout done before you show up to work around 8 o'clock in the morning to workplace. You are wide awake compared to everyone else who is still walking around like zombies with coffee in their hand. You're wide awake.
Right.
You're active, more likely to be active more day long. You will burn more fat because you started that activity early in the morning. You'll keep your blood pressure lower, and you'll be pleasantly tired by the end of the day because you have done that early morning exercise. You will protect yourself from diabetes. You will build your muscles more effectively, and all of those things. So I think it is the best source of energy that you're tapping into at that time in the morning.
So, you know, there's all sorts of diets right now. I mean, I've been a anti-sugar person for a long, long time, and think that that's important. Obviously, caffeine. So, could you talk a little bit about? I mean, you know, again, we could have a whole class just or a whole thing just on food, but could you give us a few things about what to eat? You talked about the rhythms of when, but I'm sure there's some things you have to say about what.
So what is important and when is even more important, because I think there's something that we have to really understand this very clearly, is that at the end of the day, that eating the right foods at the right time is important. So the basic wisdom is eat mostly vegetables and fruits and small portions of whole grains, nuts and seeds, and the right plant-based oils. And that summarizes everything. Eating lots of vegetables and fruits and nuts and seeds and whole grains, beans and legumes, and plant-based oils. Whether you really need to have a carnivore diet, means if you are used to it, that's fine. But plant-based diet, tons of studies tell you that it's good. If you have to eat animal protein, start with fish. Maybe have little eggs and chicken if you like, but heavy duty red meat is, there's no need. If you are really physically active, that is perfectly fine. But from an Ayurvedic perspective, eating foods which are fresh, alive, vibrant, like fruits and vegetables, complex grains, slow carbs as I call them, sprouts, clean water, and it's mostly God-made foods versus man-made foods. And the key here is not what is in your plate, but eating in small portions, doing well, sitting down to eat, fasting in between the meals. The book I wrote earlier, Hot Belly Diet, one of the premise was, the reason why I actually wrote that book was I started watching why people are gaining weight and things, and two things stood up. One was eat late to gain some weight and sleep late and sleep late to gain some weight.
Eat late, gain some weight, and sleep late to gain some weight. Okay.
And 71% of the country was doing both. 70% of the country was doing both. They were eating late and they were sleeping late. With all the overweight people that were complaining, were doing both of these things. So we just changed that to have your evening meal by 6:30 or 7 and not eat anything till that time, and then go to bed by 9:30 or 10. So I think eating the right food is important. Eating the right timing is very important. Avoiding snacking in between the meals. I encourage people to fast in between the meals. You can have a light breakfast, You can have a decent lunch. You can have a light dinner. But there's no need to snack any food in between these meals.
Absolutely. And what's your reasoning for that?
The reasoning is the more you give, the more unstable your blood sugar gets. Every time you eat something in between the meals, there's a blood sugar impact where the blood sugar goes up and down. And then it creates a mimic like a false hunger. So you suddenly sugar goes down, and that makes you feel as if you need a snack, or you're feeling lightheaded, or you want food, which is not a real genuine hunger. There's not a bodily need that you have had a decent breakfast and you can be happy to wait till lunch. But at 11 o'clock, if you're grabbing a nut bar or anything like that, it's not a genuine hunger. And that makes your blood sugar fluctuate. If you're constantly having blood sugar fluctuation, you're more likely to store fat.
Got it. Okay. Let's talk about blue light. You know, I have arguments with my son, 14-year-old, about one thing and one thing only, devices. And we actually have a rule finally that, you know, no phone after 10 o'clock. He cannot, you know, take it to his bed. And I don't follow that, but I have him follow it. So to get him in a good habit. So, I mean, probably 10 o'clock at night is probably still too late. But what is your idea around...
I think I tell people that whatever you're working or doing anything with any screen, whether it's cell phone,
yes,
iPad, Kindle,
TV,
reader, TV, 9 o'clock onwards, you should not do that. You
okay.
should not have television in your bedroom, and you should not be exposed to any blue light. If you have to crack open a magazine or read a book, that's a perfectly fine time to do that. But any exposure to blue light around that time when the melatonin is peaking is going to disrupt everything. And there's enough research that is coming out where we used to think that sleep is not that important. Whenever you have time to go to sleep, that is good. But now we are painfully realizing it's a miracle drug. It's a miracle drug, and we are not understanding and using the full potential of sleeping well and getting enough sleep, because sleep is the most potent anti-inflammatory activity that you will ever do. It is one of the most potent anti-inflammatory activity, and inflammation is the silent killer that we're talking about right now.
Okay, so let me go to sleep and inflammation in a second, but let me continue on blue light. Not everybody's going to do this. I mean, I have enough clients where we spend, you know, sessions just on this. So on what are they doing with their phone at night? I mean, like, where are they putting it? All this. So people are really addicted to this, and I'm one of them. There's a book called How to Break Up with Your Phone, and it's like one of the best books you can buy. In fact, I couldn't even read the book; I had to listen to the book. So are there things that people can do, sort of as an interim? For example, you know, put your phone on warm light, night light that's not blue. I mean, just things like that. And I know that isn't ideal, but it's better than having blue light until 11 o'clock. So are there some tricks there that we could talk about?
Well, I just have a standing message that I convey, that I don't check my messages on my smartphone from 9 p.m. till 6 a.m. in the morning. And I think once everybody knows about that, then I do it. And then I literally put the phone in a different room, and I don't touch it. I mean, whichever type of light that you're using and stuff like that, there's real no need to do that. There's a conscious way that we feel fearful if someone needs us, the kids are out late in the night, that they might call you, this and that. But all of those things are something that you'll have to find your own creative ways of dealing with it. But the challenge is developing habit. People get a panic attack if they forget their phone and they're on the road somewhere, as if they won't be able to find their way without their phone. It is something that whole culture is shifting and changing, and we're becoming more and more dependent. And we have to train ourselves to live without this accessory unnecessarily. It is something that is dictating our life, because earlier the work time was you show up for work at 9 o'clock, come back at 5, and that is it. But now you are on call all the time. With the smartphone, you're working all the time. And everybody expects you to respond to any text all the time. And it's a culture that you cultivate. It's something that you want to develop, but you'll have to draw some boundaries. If you're not able to draw the boundaries, it's going to affect your physiology, and you'll have to choose. Whether I see lots of people who spend their health to get some wealth, but not always you can get it back.
So I want to, again, talk about, thank you for that, sleep and immunology, and then I want to go to COVID for a second. So talk a little bit about sleep. I mean, you know, what's your thoughts on 6, 7, 8, 9 hours? I assume teenagers should get more. I mean, just give us a couple minutes on that.
Well, I think everybody should get at least, I would say, minimum 6 to 7 hours of sleep. If you can get more than that is important. But even the quality of sleep is important. So
sure.
I think getting enough good quality deep sleep is always helpful and important for everything that we do. So I think in all those categories, going to bed is the key. If you're not able to go to the bed at proper time, by 11 by latest, and you should make the bedroom nice and dark, you should keep it a little bit cooler, and more importantly, you should be minimizing any gadgets or things in the room that is affecting your sleep with anything. There are rituals that Ayurveda talks about, rinsing your feet with cool water, having a little aroma diffuser in the room, maybe taking a warm shower and helping you to unwind from the stress. All of those things is important. But the biggest factor that influences sleep is whether you are eating too close to bedtime.
Right. And drinking too, right?
And drinking too, alcohol and food. Both of those things influence. So you want to make sure that you are done eating by 7 o'clock so that by 10, 3 hours is the optimum time to allow the food to move through and will not influence your sleep. And so that is one thing that you have to be cautious. And secondly, you have to have enough physical activity. There are three pillars of health: diet, sleep, and exercise. And they all feed off each other. If you have good enough diet, then you will have energy to exercise. If you are doing exercise and you are pleasantly tired, then you will fall and stay asleep. If any one of these pillars gets disrupted, then you are affecting all the three of them.
So, okay, right. No question about it, the three. Let's talk about COVID. So we're getting like different things going on in the last, I think it's been 10 weeks now today, at least in the Bay Area. So we're getting
I think there's only one thing that is going on. There are two types of immunity from an Ayurvedic perspective. One is a natural immunity that you get from your parents, from the genes that you have. And the second is an acquired immunity. Acquired immunity is something that you cultivate by a mindful, positive lifestyle. The way you eat, the way you sleep, the way you exercise, the way your mind and mood and emotional health is, that all affects your acquired immunity. And those people who are building a good, robust, strong acquired immunity, their immune system, their digestive systems, their behavior to inflammation and response to the inflammation is healthier. Because people are dying because of coronavirus and the cytokine storm and the inflammatory response that the body unleashes to this toxicity. And if you are quenching that cytokine storm by an anti-inflammatory lifestyle, I think that is the key here. So, and that is what I'm worried about during quarantine right now. The new study that came out, where people are having even more unhealthier lifestyle while the shelter in place. The alcohol sales have gone up by 243%.
Yep.
People are becoming sedentary and eating bad junk food, sitting home all day long. So I think they have coined a new term called as quarantine 15. So by the time we come out of this in a few weeks, we'll have
30.
15 extra pounds to burn.
Well, so that's the I think the negative part of it, because you do have more time, you're sitting around, but you also have more time to exercise. So
you
people
have more time
who
to
heretofore,
exercise. You have more time to meditate. You have more time to do self-reflection. You have more time to do some self-reflective journaling. You have time to do some brisk cardio workout at home, sweat it out, do some steam inhalation, do some oil massages. pay attention to eating, having a diet of colorful fruits and vegetables, adopting all the six tastes in your diet, fasting in between the meals, stop eating after 6 o'clock and don't eat anything till 8 o'clock or 9 o'clock, practice intermittent fasting. This is the best time to cultivate new habits.
Totally.
Paying attention to your body, maybe drinking some herbal teas, acquiring some new taste to various different foods, paying attention to sleep. What are the hindrances? How well can you sleep? Maybe get a gadget that will track all of these activities that will help you understand all of these things. Maybe do an in-house purge or a cleanse with castor oil, a juice fast, things like that. So I think there are so many things that you can do to work on even optimizing your bowel movement, scraping your tongue, gargling with salt and turmeric, dry brushing your body to boost the flow of neurohormones or neurotransmitters that will boost your immunity. Paying attention
to brushing warm, your body? Brushing?
Dry brush. So you can get a dry brush which sloughs and improves the circulation and regulates the lymphatic circulation in the body. It's called as dry brushing.
Okay.
Lifting
weights. That's not like something you could do where you in the shower and you're like, you know, using
the you can
sponge.
Do that. You can get a loofah or things
like
that. You can do that.
Well,
but
you can also do a ton of stuff. I think that it's in both cases of corona or not corona or COVID or whatever, is that, you know, there's pros and cons to this. I mean, yes, you're sitting around and yes, you have more chance to snack because you're not as focused and running around. There's not as much running around. I mean, so the good news is there's more time and space. There's not as much arranging. I mean, like I spent so much time before traveling, arranging, you know, for my kid, for my own travel. There's not as much of that. So there is more time to say, all right, I'm going to get up and I do exercise in the morning every day. And I meditate. And there is more time for that, for sure. And then every day at 4 o'clock, this is the hardest part. I make myself leave and go outside and go, even if I'm just going up the street and back for 20 minutes just to get out and get sunshine. Because it's really easy to sit and work. Like this to me is what we're hearing from our clients, that you just sit in your chair all day because you don't have to move because everything's right here. So that part, I think, is the most problematic, is that people being too sedentary and not getting up even once an hour and, you know, moving and shifting and there's like
these
back problems I'm hearing about, things like that.
These are self-limiting beliefs. These are self-limiting beliefs, and we need to learn to overcome the challenges and, more importantly, find the blind spot why we kind of feel a little bit more lazy and dull. You can have a stand-up desk. You can go out and get some fresh air as you're doing, maybe even doing some jumping jacks for about 10 times every hour or something. There are so many ways that you can do some things. You can have some free weights. You can have some rubber bands in your home office and do a few things. You're sipping hot water. That'll put you to a restroom break more often and things like that. Sipping hot infusions and herbal teas. That'll kindle your appetite and improve your digestion. Having a high-fiber diet so you see a well-formed bowel movement. There are so many ways to experiment with your body when the shelter is in place.
During this time, right. So there's also a thing around, I'm not going to call it depression because I think that I don't want it to be confused with clinical depression. But, I mean, there is definitely more of that right now. But there is a sadness, I'm going to say, that's causing anxiety or the other way around, anxiety causing sadness, because
of us being in the
situation we're in. So,
social distancing should not be social isolation.
What did you say? Yeah, social
isolation.
Social
distancing should not be
social
isolation.
It's physical distancing, right, exactly.
Physical distancing, there are ways and means that you can still walk and look at the person which is 6 feet away from you in their eyes and smile and wave. Nobody's stopping you from doing that.
No,
and
we can still talk.
That changes. That literally changes the way your oxytocin release happens. That you just feel that someone took an attention off you while you're walking on the street. You looked at them. They waved. You smiled. They smiled. That makes you feel good.
It does.
It is something that the more you do it, the more you set it like a cascade of some positive emotions that happens. The more you put yourself in a corner and then you tuck yourself with passive entertainment, those are the things that is going to really devalue this whole time. So talking to people, feeling your feelings, writing down some things, communicating, appreciating people, maybe even dig out some old contacts, sending them a hello, making sure that they are doing okay during this time. Is there something that you can do or things like that? So there are numerous ways to do this. And I think it boils down to self-care. It boils down to self-care.
You got
to
take care of yourself
physical,
first.
Your physical, which is mental and emotional, but more importantly, spiritual. Because this is the time that is giving us an idea that what are we doing this for? Okay, we run around and chase our tail all day long to earn some money and pay our bills. But there's more to life than this. Is that right?
Right.
It's about relationship, our kids, our spouses, our parents, our relatives, our social connections, maybe hobbies that you have forgotten, that you have time to do those things.
Right.
All of those things is bringing it back. So I think there's a silver lining. And
yeah,
from an Ayurvedic perspective, there's a reason why this is happening to humanity, because it's the degradation of the dharma, as we call it, because we were so busy and unmindful of the world and so isolated that the countries were making their own decisions and we were not paying attention to our neighbors or the other countries, and everybody was getting into a little bit more egoistic mode of doing things. And now, with just one stroke, we are building bridges and we are learning from each other. The whole world is having this rise in collective consciousness, which is going to change quite a few things. The way we do business, the way we think, the way we make our choices, everything is going to shift and change. And I think it's going to change for good. That's a better thing. Even though this is 2 months that we feel, it's just a blip in time. But it's going to reset. It's the reset button.
Reset,
where
reinvention.
You are
seeing
new things coming on screen after you press the reset button. And it will be reloaded. It will be glitch-free, I would hope so. And more importantly, especially in the corporate life where you guys work and everything, we are going back to individuals who work and whom with we work. We are going to look at them. We are going to listen to them. We are going to create a little emotional bonding with each other. We are a little bit more aware about ourselves in our houses as well as in the workplace. What is our internal state telling us? And then we are empowering ourselves with the right choices. We are empowering ourselves with the new habits that we are going to learn. And we are going to responsibly maintain those habits, because that is not, that is something that someone told you to do. But
we can't go back to busyness.
I got a cellular experience. I feel good by doing it, and I would stick to continue to do something like this. And in spite of me doing everything right, I still have to synchronize with what Mother Nature is happening, to expect the unexpected and how resilient I am to those unexpected events. So this is all sounds very esoteric and spiritual, but this is cutthroat medicine. This is cutthroat corporate leadership training, I would say.
Right. Well, you've really given us a lot of good ideas, Dr. Suhas. I want to thank you. I'm noticing the time here. I'm sorry to cut us off because we're really getting some good stuff.
We can talk a lot about all this.
Yes, we could. So let me just say one more thing. I want to add to what you're saying. I mean, we're doing a lot of things. Of course, with corporations right now, and one of the things we're going to start doing is helping people get outside and walking meetings we're calling it Pivot in the Park, where you're getting people outside and getting teams outside. And I'm doing more of that myself, getting people in my life, friends and things in my backyard, and just getting people outside, because being outside is safe. So I really want to just mention that. And I also wanted to remind people of going on to Twitter. You can get to Dr. Suhas on Twitter. It's spelled out Dr. Suhas, and then his website is drsuhas.com.
You can also take a look at my clinic and clinical services at ayurvedichealing.net, ayurvedichealing.net.
Okay, awesome. Thanks for that. Next Wise Talk, everybody, is June 23rd at 4 p.m. Pacific with Elizabeth Stanley. She's the author of Widen the Window, Training Your Brain and Body to Thrive During Stress and Recover from Trauma. So, again, very apropos right now. We had chosen the idea of stress management as our topic for the year, obviously not knowing about COVID, but it can't be more appropriate. So we're going to continue to offer these every month to talk about how we can, you know, look at our exercise, look at our sleep, look at our diet, and look at our psychological health.
There are seven pointers that you want to remind everyone, and that is diet, sleep, exercise, meditate, breathe, detox, have fun.
Yeah. Thank you, Dr. Soas. Thank you so much for being with us today. I really appreciate your wisdom, and I only wish you the best, and I hope that we can keep in touch.
Thank you. All the best.
All right. Bye now.